You've tuned in to the Round Table Podcast, episode 13.
Hello, everyone. I'm Brian Humphrey.
And I'm Dave Robison.
And you're listening to the Round Table Podcast.
Yes, you are. The mellow tunes of the Roundtable Podcast. Each week on the Roundtable Podcast, Brian and I invite writers to come onto the show and pitch a story idea to us and our esteemed guest hosts.
That's right. And then we dig our sharp and maniacal claws into it, talking about what works and what doesn't, kick around some ideas, and try to fine-tune it into a solid and writable story.
What we call literary gold. And dude, right. We really have to talk about your FM voice affliction. honestly, man, I keep wanting to hear boom, chicka, wow, wow in the background while
we used to have that. And then I told you, you know.
Yeah, we told you to get rid of it. And now you're doing the bow wow voice. It's like, come on.
We're trying to spice it up a little, Dave.
Dude, okay. All right. Well, you know, I got some spice for you. How about this? All right. How about this? It's going to be old news by the time this episode actually hit the airwaves, but I just minutes ago got the email that the Roundtable Podcast has been nominated for a Parsec, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So to go on top of all of the gratitude and thanks that has no doubt has been showered out there already, I'm going to have this immortalized right now and tell everyone thank you so much. That's more than we could have possibly imagined in such a short time. The support of the community is amazing, and thank you for that award. Well, whether we get it or not at this point, it's awesome.
That's right.
Very cool. And speaking of very cool, how's that for a graceful segue? Let's get our guest hosts for this week's episode up and on the mic, shall we?
Let's do it. This is very cool.
This is beyond awesome. When I first started getting into podcasting, the Dune Steve podcast was not necessarily whispered in dark corners, but it was spoken of in hushed tones with reverence by anyone who brought it up. And in tuning into it, I can certainly understand why. Big Anklevich and Rish Outfield have created a marvelous soundscape and fictionscape with the Dune Steve, and we are deeply honored and pleased to have them on the show. Guys, thank you so much for taking time and being on the Roundtable Podcast.
Hey, no problem, Dave.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I wanted to share this with you because this was a very visceral experience and a testament to the type of audio fiction and audio events that you guys create. I was driving to work today listening to the last words of Dan Stupak. Mm-hmm. And Friends, if you haven't listened to this, it's a great story, but don't listen to it in your car.
No.
I wire my car, my iPad, into my car sound system. And part of the essence of this story is that there's this shockwave that's coming that's going to obliterate everything. And one of the very cool audio effects you guys rolled into that was this mounting reverberation that underscores all of the dialogue. And so I'm sitting there driving. I'm going, holy crap, what is wrong with my car? Because it's blasting through the speakers and it's, whoa. And I'm thinking I've got wheels that are wobbling off. I'm checking tire pressure. So, and it created a very visceral and immediate experience of the audio event. So congratulations, but Jesus, don't scare me like that.
Yeah, it was only the end of the world, Dave.
I know. Oh, God. So, now,
Dave, what is your day job, if it's okay to ask? Because your voice, you sound like one of those sports talk radio guys. I'd like you to say the Sixers are having their worst season yet.
The Sixers are having their worst season yet.
I just wanted to.
You're the guest host, so what you want, we do.
That's right.
I'm a web developer with an educational software company up here in Nashville.
It's nothing like being a sports
talk. Not in the least. No, it's about the diametric opposite of that. But Brian and I did a a radio theater company called Roundtable. Rabbit Hole Radio Theater out in Colorado. And we wrote, produced, and recorded and released with the help of like 250 volunteers and a writing team and a production team, over 40 hours of audio drama. So I've got it in my blood.
How long ago was that, man?
That was just when podcasting was just starting out. That was like around 2004.
Oh, nice. So
we might actually look into getting out there. Why are you interviewing me? Well played, Rish Outfield. Well played.
It's sort of like when Carson would come on the Letterman show and he'd be like, you know, Dave, the gap in your teeth, there's something there. And you just like, well, he does it so often that he can't help but shift into that mode.
Sure. Sure. This is going to be like dueling interviews. Okay. Now it's my turn. So what is on the Big Anklevich, Rish Outfield, Dune Steve plate? Are there projects upcoming that that the world needs to be made aware of?
Well, there's more stories to come. We try and do an episode every 10 days or so. Doesn't ever make it to be quite every week. And sometimes it's more like every 2 weeks. Right now it's getting to be every month. I don't know. We're trying to get things back in line. But yeah, there's more stories to come. I guess the big news, or if it can be called that, we have our Broken Mirror story event. The winners of that contest are coming up. They'll be podcast sometime down the line. At the rate we're going, it'll probably be 4 or 5 months from now, but something like that. It's coming up.
So tell our audience about what was that contest, and what was the competition?
Basically, it's something we do every year, and Big and I are both writers. Before we became podcasters, we would assign a premise and say, here's what we're going to both write a story about, and one of us would come up with something. And then we had a month, say, to write the story, and we would swap them out and then argue over whose was better. And we decided to do that on the show as a sort of contest where we would just give a one-sentence premise, and people had a deadline to send us a story that was based on that premise. And then nowadays we have slush readers beyond just ourselves, and so we gave everybody all the stories with the names off of it, and they had to give them a number, a grade from 1 to 10, and then we averaged it all out, and the ones that got the highest scores will be podcast. This is the third time we're doing it. But as Big and I get older, or fatter, one or the other, we've gotten mature, much lazier, and we've delegated so much of the responsibility. That's really why we haven't had an episode in so long, is it used to be us. We would edit every episode, produce all the sound effects, and get everybody we could to do voices and do it ourselves. And we had nobody to depend on but ourselves. And then we had more and more people volunteer to help. Like you were saying, how you had 200 volunteers.
Sure.
We don't have that many, but we have people that volunteer to do voices, to do art, to do effects, or to do a whole story where they produce it and get people to do the voices and do it all, edit it together, and then give it to us. And we just run it. And we took advantage of that so many times that we actually hit a point where neither of us was working on anything. And the guys that had deadlines didn't make their deadlines. And so we had no episodes. It was kind of embarrassing to realize that we went from doing everything to doing nothing.
Wow.
And so last week we got together and we each recorded a whole story that would be ours to produce. And Big got his done first, so that's going to be our next episode.
Big
wins.
And then
your guest today, Ari Chambliss, she has the episode after that where she produced it and edited it and got voices and sound effects and music. I guess I didn't mention the music. And that's really what makes our show so difficult to put out weekly or to put out every 10 days, is if it were just us reading a story from beginning to end, we could do that.
Sure.
Probably twice a week. But because you have a different voice for each character, and you actually have children for the children characters, which was a huge mistake, but we continue to do it, and then sound effects and music, and it's all edited together. And usually they're not tiny little stories like Daniel Shupak was. They're usually like half hour, 45 minutes, 55 minute kind of stories. And sometimes it just takes months to get a production like that done.
But that's also one of the remarkable appeals of the Dune, Steve, is the production quality. I mean, you don't get just a narrated story. You get an audio experience. What's the URL for Dune, Steve?
It's dunesteve.com.
That's easy. T. Morris has his bell. We have a whip. Yeah.
Learn to love it, baby.
Learn to love the whip. That's what Pip Ballantyne
there's
said.
There's a whip. There's a way. I
oh my God! Yes,
that's right. A wise
I love
man
it.
Once said.
There's the front of the t-shirt and the back of the t-shirt.
That's right.
Plus, Murr wanted us to add and always set us establish a safety word. We're still trying to work that into the writing process, but we will. So look, gents, I'll tell you what. We definitely encourage all of our listeners to please do check out the Dune Steve. Feed. It is exceptional audio fiction and exceptional commentary at the end as Big and Rish work through the various issues and often go off on wild and divergent tangents, which is equally entertaining. But what I'd like to do now, if it's all right with you guys, is let's take a short promotional break and let's get our guest writer on and do some story workshopping. What do you say?
Sounds good.
Yeah. Brian, any comment on that?
Oh, no. Let's get into it because I'm excited tonight.
God. He always leaves me hanging. This is getting to
be a thing.
I didn't leave
you hanging. I got right in there.
You did not. I said, okay, we'll play it back and we'll hear the 3-second pause. Big came in and saved my ass. You're just sitting there going.
No, because you said, okay, guys, and that doesn't mean me. That means the hosts.
Oh, God.
You have to be more specific.
He's not a guy.
Hey, Brian, we're going to cut Dave's microphone for the next 10 minutes. And you're going to have to run the show. Are you ready?
That's fine. I'm totally on for tonight.
All right. That's exactly what we're going to do. Folks, when we come back from the promotional break, Dave's mic is going to be silent for 10 minutes. Seriously. And Brian is running the show. Stay tuned.
Welcome to the interwebs, home of everything. Would you like to try the new Fruity Odie Slusho?
What do you want?
A podcast?
What kind of podcast?
Give me one with affable hosts talking about geeky things they do.
I want one with geek-related news.
Anything else?
Let me see. How about a podcast with sometimes interesting topics or celebrity interviews?
Yeah, let me have the one with the fitness tips, the one that talks about patio books, maybe the one that talks about upcoming cons.
If you want all of that, why not get a combo?
You have something that has all of that?
I wouldn't offer it if we didn't.
Is that possible?
Is that legal?
You want This Weekly from GeekRadioDaily.com.
What's that?
A running gag.
So what is This Weekly?
It's the sometimes weekly podcast with stealth geeks who talk about their week, geek news, and it features looks at patio books, fit club, and con updates.
I don't know.
One of the hosts is a woman.
Oh, really?
With a sexy voice.
Sold. Geek Radio Daily has forums for geek talks, an active Facebook and Twitter page, and the award non-winning sometimes weekly podcast. All this and more at geekradiodaily.com.
And we're back. Welcome back to the Roundtable Podcast. Today, our guest writer is a voice actor, actress extraordinaire. She's also a writer having published her first story at the age of 10. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Renee Chambliss. Renee, welcome
Hi.
To the store. Oh, Dave.
It's okay.
That's why I need you, man. Like, I can come in with the workshop stuff, but...
He's
you
silent. I'm sorry. We made an agreement, and he's a gentleman.
Yeah,
damn
you're doing
it.
Awesome. Don't worry.
Damn you.
We're a nice
Renee, welcome
nice
to the
crowd.
Show.
Thank you. I'm happy, happy to be here.
Excellent. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I am a writer and an audiobook narrator, a voice actress. I'm also a mom. And I've got two kids that keep me really busy running them around to various activities. And they might chime in at some point because we're kind of in the crucial bedtime homework phase of the day. But so far, so good. So
excellent.
That's about it.
And they
right,
do
Dave,
like to chime in.
They
yeah.
do.
Dave, you need to come back on now. I bow to your greatness.
I don't think he's going to.
He's
I can
such
tell you
an
more.
No, that's okay. So, let's
I'm afraid
well,
I can't
Dave.
Let you back in the room, Dave.
Dave, I don't want to dig into it yet because I know that there's more to say, and I know that you have prepared something.
Boy, he's a rule follower.
He really is, isn't he? All right, well, screw Dave. We'll go on without him. And let's dig into this. So you have a story to share with us, and we have some awesome guys on from the Dune Steve, and so let's see what we can do. You have about 8 minutes, 5 to 8 minutes, and you have a prepared story to share with us?
Well, yes and no. My situation is a little different, I think, than most of your guest writers. Well, for one thing, I know these guys. We work together right. on their, well, I've done voice work for them. They've done voice work for me. I produce episodes of the Dune Steve here and there. And in fact, I'm one of the reasons why there's been a big lapse in episodes. It's taken me a while to get this one together. So I know them. And when I heard about what you guys were doing, I thought they would be the perfect people to help me with this situation I'm in. I have written... My first novel, Dreaming of Deliverance, is for adults. It's not a kid book. And I have a sequel in the works that I'm working on. There are a couple short stories out that are related to it. They also will both be produced in audio. We're getting there with that. But in the meantime, I've also written this kid's novel. And it's not a picture book. It's a novel. It's for, I'd say, middle grade age. So it's not young adult, but it's not super little kids. It's kind of in the middle.
Kind of preteen.
Yeah, tweens is what they call them these days. And I wrote this story because my kids really wanted to read something that I had written, and they just weren't ready for Dreaming of Deliverance. It's got a lot of swearing and right. takes place in a prison, and so there's just stuff that really wouldn't have been okay for them to read. So I wrote this kid's book, and I had so much fun doing it.
And they dive into the clouds in that book, too, isn't it?
In the kids' book?
No, in Dreaming of Deliverance. What is it that you used in that, the phrase you said? That was the place where they dove into the clouds together. Oh. Something like
I don't
that.
Remember. I don't think it was clouds, but yes, that's a scene that my wrong. Kids wouldn't be quite ready for. So there aren't any scenes like that in this kids' book. But so anyway, I need help with something that is related to this kids' book. But it isn't the kids' book. But I'll tell you this premise of that book just to give you an idea of what I'm looking for.
Sure, yeah.
This novel is told from the point of view of an 11-year-old girl, and she has a half-brother who's 5. And her stepdad is an architect and designs these big houses for people. And he has kind of famous, important clients. And one of his clients is a movie director. And this director is working on a big blockbuster comic book movie. And he meets the family just in conjunction with talking with the dad about his architecture plans. And when he meets the family, he decides that the little 5-year-old brother is perfect to star in this movie as the young superhero. And so that causes problems for, you know, the girl telling the story because that would kind of stink to have, you know, your brother picked to be in this, you know, big, huge deal movie. So right. what I need help with is I didn't want to use an existing comic book superhero story just because I wanted to create something of my own. And so I have a rough idea of what that comic book story is, but I would love to flesh it out more. I think it would be a great, it'll help me just with the overall story, knowing, you know, kind of what this little boy is going to be doing in this movie, but also I would love to do a companion, like short piece to go with the novel that would be available separately. Maybe even it could be some kind of graphic novel, comic book sort of thing. So I totally. Really want it to be a, you know, believable, three-dimensional, fleshed-out story, but it's not a whole novel, so... It's just a little different from what you guys have done before. So I can tell you what I have so far. The superhero's name is Green Machine, and I see him as sort of a bionic man kind of a situation where he had some horrible injury when he was a young boy and had to be, you know, cyborg welded somehow into this superhero. One other thing that's important and needs to be in there is the character in the comic book, the Green Machine character, has a sister, and that sister is sort of pivotal to his whole story. And the reason for that is in my kids' book, there is another character who is the movie director's daughter who is really trying to get her dad to put her in this movie. And so she comes and sort of tries to take over as the role of the sister to this little boy to sort of show her dad how she would be the perfect sister in the movie. And that, of course, is very difficult for my main character. So somehow in the, you know, history, the premise of that comic book story, the sister needs to be key. And, you know, I don't have a lot of ideas about that. I thought, you know, maybe it's something that kind of happens to both of them, but she's maybe not damaged as much. So, you know, she doesn't become a superhero, but she's, you know, older, sort of a comfort to him, guides him, mentor. You know, maybe the parents are gone. You know, I just don't know. So I thought that Vig and Rish might be able to help me with that because I've heard them talk lots about superhero and comic book movies.
Yeah, absolutely. So Vig and Rish, will we send it over to you guys first as the guest hosts. What do you think? And do you have any thoughts for Renee?
It sounds solid to me. I think you've done yourself not a disservice so much, but an easy way out would be that the girl that's narrating this story thinks that the comic book idea is dumb. And so you don't have to make it great. You don't have to make it something that exists on its own. You can be something that rips off something else and doesn't make any sense and all this. And she's like, oh, you know, the script is so bad, but look at the source material. But to actually make it something that you could spin off into its own property or something that's intriguing enough that somebody would be like, wow, I would want to see a movie of that. And that happens sometimes in movies about other movies where you're like, wow, the movie they're talking about, Why didn't they make that? That sounds really good. So you've got a problem in that if it's too good, maybe it distracts and people are like, well, no, I want to see them shooting more of the movie. but if it's too bad, then you know, then it's not important. Then it's just, you know, the square-jawed superhero with the really tacky dialogue and he puts his hands on his hips when he talks.
Right.
But I mean, I'm intrigued by the idea. How much of the actual superhero movie is in your novel?
There's not much. I envision this as being a potential series. So this kids' novel takes place before any of the movie has been shot. The kids' novel is all before when the little boy gets chosen and when the director's daughter comes. And she's very obnoxious. She has her own reality show, so she's got this crew kind of following her around. She's a sort of spoiled princess type. So this story all takes place before the movie starts shooting. But I have ideas for, you know, sort of what can happen with these characters throughout that process also. And
has it been 10 minutes?
Oh, God.
Dave,
that
phrased
was
it badly.
I was counting.
Hold your breath for 10 minutes. I meant, oh, shoot. I'm sorry.
Holy crap.
Well, good job, okay. Both of you. Brian
Thank
did a great
you.
Job, and Dave, you did an excellent job restraining yourself.
Oh, my God. That's the hardest thing I've done in all my life.
It was, I'm going to second that. There's a reason that okay. I'm not even going there. Dave.
Before we go any further, we need to put out the disclaimer. Renee, everything that's said from this point forward, whether it's by me, Brian, Big, or Rish, might be complete and utter crap.
Very, very likely is.
Yes,
yeah, no,
absolutely.
Might. Jeez.
Well, no, not Big.
I was going to say, I'm not sure the disclaimer was necessary in this case. But
It's important to recognize that the discussion that follows will take us in directions none of us intended to go, and it's purely offered in the spirit of knocking something loose creatively and seeing where it takes us. So
that's exactly what I wanted. So
cool. Cool. Big, what's your first take on Renee's story?
I'm interested in, I have a couple questions, I guess, about the characters that you've talked about. You gave us a really sparse, you know, we know the superhero is called the Green Machine.
Right.
And he has some sort of cyborg type
right.
goings on about him. Have you gotten into that any further than that?
No, I don't think I have. Hold on. I had this all ready to go and now I'm not finding it. No, this is total, really, this is backstory that, you know, how some writers, they'll do personality profiles of all of their characters and it just doesn't even end up making it into the book at all, but it just sort of helps the author. That's kind of how this started. I just needed something. You know, my main story was this whole interaction between the brother and the sister and this young actress. But I wanted it to, be real. I wanted to have something behind it. So that's why I thought it would be great to expand the whole Green Machine comic book.
Okay. Premise.
So I don't have much at all. That's why I was hoping you guys might be able to help me. And we can throw ideas around and you can tell me. I just, you know, I've seen various superhero movies. I am not a comic book person, so I just don't, I like, well, you guys know, I like things to be done well and accurate. And so I just wanted to feel real and feel believable that this, you know, could be something that would happen.
Okay. So, oh, go ahead.
But you are planning on spinning this off and telling the story of the Green Machine at some point.
I would love to do that. And I thought it would be good sort of as a short story, kind of maybe illustrated sort of companion content that, you know, people wouldn't have to read the story, but they might like to just to get something additional.
Okay. So I was thinking this Green Machine, you might, one thing you might want to start with is what, you know, he's supposed to be a superhero. What does his robotic components allow him to do? What is his power? Is he able to run fast? Is he able to be super strong? Is he able to, does he have rocket boots that he can fly with? What does, is he able to do as the Green Machine? And the sister, I was curious, she's supposed to be like the older sister that takes care of the Green Machine as he grows up.
Yes, that's what. How
old is the director's daughter?
She's going to be like 13 or 14, but she's
and the boy is 5.
The boy is 5 or 6, so that's, you know, tricky because we all know how what happened with Anakin Skywalker when he was a little boy. But and I don't.
Yes,
know.
But you're not making a movie of this, right? You can have.
No, I'm not. I can have
precocious. He can be a little Drew Barrymore, and he's so talented that people just gasp.
And I think, and that's how I think he is. I mean, that's why he's a charming little kid and just someone that people kind of gravitate towards. And so I think that's why the director, you know, chose him. But I did find my sheet of paper, the section of the book that has my little description of it. And so I can read that to you really quick.
Sure.
It says, Green Machine was a cartoon superhero. He originally came from old comic books from the 70s, I think, but his cartoons were still on every Saturday morning. The story was that Green Machine had been in an accident when he was a boy and then was welded into this kind of superhero cyborg thing. Ev had a Green Machine costume, which he'd worn last Halloween, and about 50 Green Machine Lego sets. So that's really all that's in the book at this point.
So no mention of Fallout Boy yet?
Oh, that was inside baseball.
Brian, what do you have? Did you did anything twig for you on your the listen to Renee's story?
I'm not talking to you.
Okay, fine.
let's see. Well, my first question was, you know, how much older is she than him? But that's been answered. So, kind of getting into his story. The first thing that struck me is, you know, if he's a kid when he has this accident and he has loss of limb or something else that needs to be then, you know, biomechanically welded to his body, part of his story might deal with the loss of purpose. Somebody going through that, and not to shift into, oh, now we're in a dramatic story, but that, you know, that part of getting used to this and having it be to help him maneuver and to help him walk around, as opposed to he was, you know, then bioengineered to or mechanically engineered to be a superhero. The superhero thing is a side effect mm-hmm. of this stuff being grafted onto him. And him then discovering that, hey, wait a minute, I can actually do things to help someone. You know, it has enhanced me, and then he has that realization and becomes the Green Machine, as opposed to, you know, people building him into the Green Machine.
Yeah, I think that's great. And I think the sister could be key with that, because being a little kid, you know, mm-hmm. he might not realize things about himself that she might be able to pick up on.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Renee, I wanted to ask, in the context of the comic book, is there going to be a parallel telling? Is the story the main arc of the primary story? Is it important that the Green Machine comic book story somehow leverage or in some way cue a significant event that happens in your main story?
That's a good question.
That is a good question. The main conflict that comes up because of that relates the Green Machine story with the main story is the fact this sister, I mean, she is really pivotal, because in my main story, it's a sister telling that story. And the fact that this kind of very glamorous, flashy, obnoxious girl is coming in trying to take over and sort of push her out is really difficult and upsetting. So I think that sister role is really important in the Green Machine. I mean, it has to be a big enough role that this girl would want to try to go for it. And as you guys were talking about, as Brian was talking about the, you know, sort of initial surgery and what's sort of happening to this little boy, being to maybe rehabilitate him or being some kind of experimental trial of how to make new prosthetics or something like that. But then it turns out that there's all this extra stuff that goes along with it. You know, maybe the sister could be a more complicated type of a character, and maybe she's not all good like this girl in the big story. Maybe she's got some ideas for what he can do with his abilities that aren't always the greatest.
Okay. What is, and our protagonist is the little brother's sister, right?
Right. She's telling the story.
So she's trying to protect her little brother and at the same time get into the movie as well, along with the other sister? No.
Her main issue is not so much, well, she's upset that her little brother has been cast in this movie because he's going to get all kinds of attention and, you know, it would kind of stink to be the sibling of a child star. But she's not the sort of person that's seeking out the spotlight. What makes it all very difficult for her is it's a blended family. So like they have the same mom, but they don't have the same dad. And she feels a little out of place and insecure as to her role in the family. And so to have this other girl come in and try to take over as the role of the big sister, which is very important to her, is really difficult.
Okay.
Can I throw something in there real quick?
Yeah.
As a possibility.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it might have been Rish, or I don't know, maybe it was Big, who mentioned that the, you know, maybe the comic book is not all that good, or that the girl doesn't really like it. And so the girl and the sister in the real story, if she starts off thinking that the comic book is cheesy and that it's, you know, it's kind of lame, but then as she watches this girl, you know, she's read it. And then the daughter of the producer or whoever it is coming in and trying to play this character, but she's playing it all wrong. And so it's almost like she's projecting the idea that her brother is playing this character. And so she's identifying with that character in the comic book. And when she sees how much the other girl is screwing up or making worse or making, you know, snide or whatever, the character of the older sister, when she's through this process starting to identify with the older sister in the comic book, then she not only is becoming protective of her brother, but protective of the character.
I like that.
Did I lose you on that?
Yeah. No, not at all.
Okay.
Can you still hear me?
I wasn't sure if I...
Yes, absolutely.
Because it's all about me, really.
It is all about you.
No, it actually is, yeah.
And something, Renee, that you probably are aware of being female is that until really recently, until maybe the late 90s, comic books were all male escapist fantasy. Mm-hmm. And it was always about, wouldn't it be neat if a boy could do this? And girls right. are dumb, or girls are, you know, not as important. And so if it was a character that was invented in the 70s, it's very possible that the sister wasn't important, or the sister was just the sidekick, or the sister that mm-hmm. would say, I want to go, and you can't because you're just a dumb girl. And something that has happened in comic books and in comic book movies as the years have gone by is they've beefed up the importance of these female characters. And it could be that she is integral to the origin now, and that she is a child genius, and she designed these cybernetics, mm-hmm. and she's the one that made him do all this stuff. And
That's
maybe
awesome.
This is a girl yes. mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. generations yeah. younger than mine look up to and say, oh gosh, it's just like Green Machine and his mm-hmm. his cyborg sister or whatever that you know they call. And so you could have your cake and eat it too by saying mm-hmm. initially, oh, it was lame and it was cheesy yeah. and it was dumb. But now look at what you know this movie is doing, and look at the lines that the sister has.
He's
or maybe
beefing
it's
it
the
up.
Influence of a teenage multimillionaireess who wants to do this part, and they've beefed the hell out of this part.
Mm-hmm.
And
the word you need is retcon.
Yeah, that's where you go back and you retell an origin and change it and say, oh no, it's always been this way, but now it's politically correct or
right.
whatever. You know, they crippled Batgirl in the 1980s in the comics, and somebody got the idea, well, let's say that she's a genius with computers mm-hmm. now. So she doesn't need her legs. She can tap into all the computers in Gotham City, and she can be mm-hmm. Batman's eyes, and she can open all the doors for him and stuff. In some ways, she's way more powerful now than she mm-hmm. ever was. And you can do that or not do that if you want to point out how sexist comic books were/are. That's kind of the fun of making up your own thing is
yes.
you can have it be cool, or you can have mm-hmm. it be eye-rollingly bad.
Pure camp.
And
well,
it's funny because you'll hear people criticize how bad comic books are, or how you know brain damaging or puerile or black and white, and then you can have people giving their college thesis on the exact same character
right.
just yeah. because when things have been around this long and passed around generationally, almost like folk tales or whatever, people think of Superman as a real guy now, as an American emblem. I'm serious. Sure. I've had conversations where people weep when they're talking about the last son of Krypton came to this world to protect us and show us what we could be and all
wow.
that. And I have you guys, are you guys comic book guys at all?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And maybe you've been in the same conversation where you're talking about what would it be like if you saw your parents die and their killer was never brought to justice. How would that eat you away and make you into a different person, shape you into a force to make criminals mm-hmm. afraid and stuff? When you talk about Batman in that way, he's not Adam West going to the Batmobile, Robin, anymore. He's something epic, something Shakespearean, something larger than life.
And something tangible at the same time. When you can put yourself in the same origin story as a superhero, And not have too much of a separation of, well, I'm not from Krypton, so I can't be Superman. But damn it, I can be Batman if I go out and learn mm-hmm. ninja skills and do all the shit that he did. But yeah, it suddenly becomes much more visceral, much more a possibility as remote as that might be.
If
what do you think? One idea I had while you guys were talking is, what if the original 70s character was a brother and they switched it to a sister.
There you go.
I like that.
Try to
yeah.
make it more appealing nice. To a modern audience. And I'm sure there'd be some controversy there among the fans. And
sure.
Right.
So here's an arc, just a what if arc. The boy's in an industrial accident of some kind, perpetuated by some evil corporation that cares nothing for the people and is cast aside. They throw him a few, you know, paltry hundreds of thousands of dollars, and that's all he gets. The sister is, or in the 70s version, it's the brother, the older brother, but in the remake, in the reboot, it's the sister. and she's a mechanical electrical engineering cyber genius, and builds the green machine suit for her brother. So you've got this dependency between the sister and the brother, because the brother's always going out and getting it blown up and dented and wrecked in supervillain fights. So he always has to come back to the sister, and she always has to repair him, both externally in terms of the suit, and then you can also go metaphorically, you know, shoring up his spirit and his courage, blah, 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 something along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one thing that occurred to me was you've got a trinity going in your main story with the little brother and his sister, and then this glitzy sister who's coming in and messing things up, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like we need a super villain, a nemesis for
Green
Machine.
Yeah, see, I
don't
have a villain. And then the other thing I'm just not sure about is, like, if this were a real, like, a real comic book story that was being made into a movie, probably the story of the kid at five isn't going to be a huge part of it, but I would love it if it could be. Just because
let's say that that's the influence of the director's daughter again. She says, well, hey, the sister just goes away in the comic books, but what if she didn't? What if she was always there, and I want to play her, so she has to be young and he has to be young, and now they've rewritten it so that half the movie is played by a five-year-old. But I don't know how much of the actual story, not the Green Machine stuff, but the novel, have you written, Renee?
It's done. I mean, I'm editing it right now, but the first draft
so
is done.
So we can't influence that part of the story. We can only influence the fictional story within the story.
Well, you can influence it a little bit. I mean, it's not set in stone yet. I like the stuff about the main character of my big story, which is unnamed, so I'm sorry. It makes it hard to refer to it. I have a terrible time naming things. It's always one of the last things I do. But
I'm the same way.
Well, and there's also one other element that, I don't know, maybe this would be good to fit into the comic book story. I usually have some sort of speculative something that happens in my fiction, and that is true in this book also. The main character and the little brother, they have three pet rats, and the pet rats can talk, and they only talk to the kids, and they're sort of their little advisors. So they give them guidance and help. And of course, the reality star just loathes them, is completely disgusted by them. And there's a big something that happens to one of the rats, and she's related, and that's very hard and disturbing for my main character. So, you know, this just occurred to me just now. Maybe there could be some sort of a rat tie.
Wait, so you've got a trinity of characters, the girl, her brother, and this other sister. You've got a trinity of rats counseling them. And now we're talking about having a trinity of characters, the hero, his sister, and the nemesis. This is not coincidence. That's got to be tied in there somewhere. What if the rats had something to do with the original inception of the comic book itself?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I mean, it just hit me just now that might be possible. I don't know, because it's important that the TV star does not like these rats. I mean, she's just, ugh, why would you ever? You know, she's got her little Yorkie that she carries around in her purse. So she's not going to. What?
Say what?
There are no sentient animals except for these three rats. So the Yorkie doesn't talk, right?
No. Well, yeah, no. And they only talk to the main character and her brother. So nobody else knows. It's not sort of like Stuart Little or something like that, where the little, rat is a character to everyone.
Do you have an origin for these rats as to why they talk and who they represent?
As to why they talk? I don't.
Okay.
Because it's a kid's book.
I don't.
It's a kid's book.
Yeah.
Animals talk.
Right.
Okay.
So I need clarification, because I'm very easily confused.
It's a confusing day. So.
Are the rats in the big story the talking rats?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, they're not in the comic book at all. But when you guys were talking about tying the two together, that maybe that can help me come up with the evil, because actually this would bother the main character a lot. Rats in fiction, with aside from Ratatouille and things, are usually bad, evil characters, and they do have a stigma you know, people aren't always like, oh, what a cute rat. You know, most people aren't thrilled with rats.
No.
And the reason that I wanted to put them in the story is that because of that, you know, my kids have had pet rats since my daughter was 7, and they are awesome pets. They are friendly. They are social. They like to be held. They come running up to see you. They're very different from a wild rat. And they've been so domesticated to be used in labs that they have had all the aggression bred out of them. And so anyway, so my main character loves them and thinks that they are fabulous. And so if in the comic book story, the rats were evil and bad, that would really bother her. So maybe another reason she doesn't like it, if that's somehow tied in.
Right. So what about one of the things that I see in comic books a lot is the, like Dave was saying, you know, you have this brilliant, whether it's a girl or a boy in the comic book who, you know, builds the gear for the younger boy that needs it, maybe is, you know, a 3-time PhD from MIT, you know, at the age of 15, had a roommate at MIT or something along those lines who was doing some kind of experiments with rats and, you know, biomechanical whatever. They shared research. She goes on to create from her little brother this you know, hero. And the other roommate uses the rats and the brother or sister's biological notes to do something with the rats that then...
Like a super rat.
Right, exactly.
An evil
that also
super rat.
has some kind of you know, mechanical welding on that is similar to what she put on her brother, or he put on his brother, depending
sure,
on...
Sure, the evil industrial organization that was responsible for the boy's accident in the first place.
Yeah, and it's all corporate espionage, so to speak. Yeah.
Well, maybe they were testing it on rats. You know,
yeah, there
testing.
You go. Right.
Perfect. There you go.
Yeah.
Big Rish, thoughts on rats, talking rats in children's book stories? How would you guys tie that in, do you think? Or is that a viable thread to pursue?
They're not cats.
Rats. Did I say cats? I meant rats.
No, I know.
I think you said rats.
I know.
Yeah,
I said
so we don't
not
have
cats,
to hate them is what
no.
you're saying.
Yeah.
okay. You know, I don't know. You could give lots of times... and you know, this is not comic books, but Disney movies and the like, they have some kind of, and sometimes in old comic books, they had a animal sidekick. There's Crypto, the super dog, and et cetera, et cetera. You could have something like that. In this case, maybe it might be better or more plausible if it was some kind of a little robot guy, a little Norby, the robot that hung around him. What was the name of that robot from the Fantastic Four that we
Herbie.
Saw today? Herbie?
Oh, God.
Something goofy like that could be their little sidekick that would be similar to the rats that the children have in the story, if you wanted to go there.
I would love it if the rats in the comic book could be bad, because I think that would really disturb my main character in my main story, and that's you know conflict is good good in fiction.
Well, that's
and
another
in storytelling
change from when comic books originally started as children's entertainment to today. You have 50-year-olds that are super passionate about comics, and it could be that there was like some minor character called the Rat Catcher who could telepathically communicate with rodents. And for some reason in this movie, they've decided to beef him up, that he has armies of rats that he sends to eat the police or to defeat his enemies. And so they've got the Green Machine stomping on rats willy-nilly and things like that. He's like, oh, no.
Blasting them with his blasters.
Turn on your flamethrower. I have no idea. Or you can have a giant rat that's got some kind of cybernetic implant so that he's super smart. And wait, already is one. No, the time, what was his name? Pinky in the Brain.
Pinky in the Brain.
Right.
But it doesn't matter because...
You could have a splinter, except for an
evil
splinter.
That's a good
dark
wow,
splinter.
There are good rats out there.
Yeah.
Or a giant rat that's made up of smaller rats.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Supernatural.
From Japan.
Yes.
And I don't know, the way that they usually come up with the supervillains for these is that it's somebody just like our hero, but went the wrong way. So maybe
they went bad.
Maybe she created a way for him to walk, and then it got damaged and she threw it away and created a super duper green machine one. And this old set fell into the wrong hands. And we've got like the White Knight or the right. Pink Ranger Panther. Oh, hey, that's good. Or, you know, some the other
Pink
color,
Ranger right? Panther. Like, yes.
Who has the same kind of armor, but uses it for evil, or not armor, but suit, or, you know, that can fly or can hover or can lift cars or whatever. And yeah, I don't know how. How much do you want the rats to play into the fictional story?
The comic book story or right. the main
when,
story?
I'm sorry. When I'm saying fictional story, the story within the yeah. story that we're developing.
Within the story.
How do you feel about putting rats in that? Or is it just that the rats are special and only exist in the real world?
It only just occurred to me through our conversation. So I hadn't thought about it before today, but I think it would be good if they were in it in some capacity, just because I think that would really bother my main character. So they don't have to be, you know, totally pivotal. I mean, the super villain doesn't have to have armies of rats, but I kind of like that idea.
Well, the good thing about superheroes is they have dozens and dozens and dozens of bad guys that they fight. Mm-hmm. You know, each episode or each issue, they've got a new guy. So, you know, they have lots of them that are less important, and that's one mm-hmm. thing you probably would want to do with this green machine is go through and invent Dr. Mindbender or whoever, you know, Professor,
all of his different villains.
A bunch of goofy villains, or not goofy villains, whatever, and you probably want to have the one that is the nemesis, and that can be your rat mm-hmm. patrol. Mm-hmm. Or
what do you guys
he's just like
think?
Batman, he's Rat Man. Only
Rat Man.
And he lives in the sewers with yes. filth, just like rats that are filthy. And our girl knows that rats aren't filthy and they right. aren't stupid. And but all right, I you've created something well, I'm passionate about already.
Yes, man. Absolutely.
Well, yeah. What do you guys think about the green machine name? Is
why,
that too
why green?
Similar?
Because it
well, rhymes. It rhymes. It was a big okay. wheel type of thing when I was a kid. And my son's first soccer team, that was their name, the Green Machine. So that's why it just got in my head. But I don't want it to sound too, I don't know. I want it to
he
sound
sounds environmentally correct is what he sounds like.
That's right. He can be like pro recycling. And
that's, he broke off from Captain Planet's team a while ago and started his own green machine group.
That, honestly, that was the first thing that glommed into my head is, okay, this guy's an eco hero of some kind.
Oh, I well, hadn't that could be another.
I hadn't either. And they probably, well, maybe they would have in the 70s, but it definitely is something that could be, would have been expanded upon now, I would think.
Yeah, maybe that's part of his revival.
Mm-hmm.
Is bringing
yeah, that's why they're
back.
Making the movie,
right?
Is this and there was a strong I remember that commercial with the Indian staring at the junkyard with the tear running yeah. down his eye. That was from the 70s, wasn't it?
I think they
true.
Started Earth Day in the 70s, so sure.
Yeah. So
sure.
Okay,
maybe
so
the bad guy
could.
Lives in a dump and junkyard, and it's just crawling with rats again, and there he loves mm-hmm. pollution.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
he doesn't recycle.
No,
that's right.
Evil
he just
bastard.
Puts his Coke cans right into the trash.
Oh, what a
so
monster.
You can be Professor Pollution.
Well, and that's beautiful. Pollution. I mean, if he is, you know, if we take Rish's idea of the old discarded first version of the technology somehow is glommed on by this nemesis. And he does dwell in the subterranean junkyards, and his, you know, rats are his friends, and maybe he's tuned it so that he has, you know, some sort of mental affinity to them and uses them as his spies, maybe not armies of
yeah.
them, but anytime you see
they would be good spies.
Right. And anytime you see a rat, it's sort of like a foreshadowing of, ooh, the nemesis is near because
yeah.
there's an evil rat. You know, and that's going to disturb your main character greatly because the rats are being portrayed as minions of darkness.
As right. long as it doesn't right. take place no. in New York.
Why? Why New
There's
York?
There's so many that...
Well, there's just so many that, yeah, you wouldn't, it wouldn't be a portent of evil anymore.
It's just a portent of
evil. Well, he'll probably show up, but you never know.
Could just be another bat.
Right.
Okay. All right.
Well, all of that works super well for me. I love how it all connects. And
yeah. Yeah.
Very, very, very cool.
I can't help shaking this feeling that the arc of the superhero comic doesn't need to, but I as a creator of these things would love to see a parallel or a more definitive tie-in. How something, I mean, with these, if they're going to make a movie, if they're making a movie out of this comic book, they're going to take a moment that was definitive in the cycle of the comic book. They never just right. pull a story out. It's going to be the big moment, or they'll do a pastiche like they did with the first Conan movie and patch together a bunch of stories and call it a story. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering if, you know, if the pivotal moment that's being filmed for the Green Machine movie could also somehow be a catalyst or a parallel to whatever the crisis point and moment is in the main story between the girl, the little brother, and the arrogant daughter of the film director. Does that make sense?
Right. Yes, and it just gave me an idea. So let me tell you what it inspired.
Awesome.
Well, since the sister is so important, what if this pivotal point that this movie is about is something happening to the sister, or the sister being separated or taken away somehow?
Yes.
Because that's how the main character in my main story feels. She feels like she's being replaced, like she's being sort of pushed aside.
Perfect.
So, and then the other thing I was thinking that might help me be able, because it would be great if this kid could continue to be in these movies. So maybe there could be some sort of a, and I don't know, this probably isn't done in superhero stories much, but some sort of a flashback type of thing where you've got, you know, the adult Green Machine and you're going through sort of what's happening with him, but he's constantly sort of reflecting back on various things that happened in his childhood. Maybe
sure.
that could allow me to keep the children in these movies, you know, for longer than just, you know, the first 10 minutes of the first one.
Yeah, that happens a lot, I would say.
Yeah, I was going to say, you guys know this better than we do. That is a fairly popular arc, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, each Batman movie from the earlier ones, you know, you had Batman where he was a boy and his parents were killed, and that was like the big thing for the first couple of films. And then the third movie, they went into this other thing where he remembers seeing the bat and he keeps flashing back to that.
Mm-hmm.
Vision thing of seeing the bad and stuff, you know, you can just, it makes me think of My Name is Earl, where they had the one kid that played, he played young Earl, and they would always go back mm-hmm. to what he did when he was a kid that he had to make up for later. And they kept going and they had that same actor as young Earl again mm-hmm. and again and again. And yeah, I mean, there's lots of that kind of stuff. I mean, superheroes are all about their backstory and, you know, they're motivated by the stuff that happened to them before. So the more things that you can come up with, and I think, you know, you could do, you know, he's not going to become the Green Machine when he's 5 years old.
Right.
He's got to struggle. I mean, he gets mm-hmm. this debilitating accident that happens to him, and he's got to struggle through dealing with that. I'm sure at first he just had like crutches or something, and mm-hmm. you know, the company didn't give him anything, so he's got nothing to really go with, and he had to deal with that. And then as time went by, you know, then his sister is coming up with the other stuff for him and all that kind of thing. So
well, what if the movie arc, the comic book arc, is as you say, big, focusing on adult Green Machine going about his business, when an old nemesis from his distant past has re-emerged and is this epic, massive threat, this machine man of the Underdark or whatever, the trash man, whatever, and is literally threatening...
Syndrome.
Oh, Syndrome. Yeah! God, that was a great movie. But in the comic book arc, in order for I mean, and the resurgence of this old nemesis brings back old memories. So there are a lot of flashbacks back. And somehow, you know, he plays back how he defeated him when he was a child, and how he missed somehow. I thought I had finished this guy off, and maybe there's some crucial key to defeating the present day uber villain to be found in this first encounter with the villain back in his youth. So you can have that very justified back and forth flashback motif.
Sounds good.
And, you know, he could have been the Green Machine for 20 years, too. And there's always more stories that maybe when people saw this movie, this hypothetical movie, the part that kids responded to was the five-year-old in the suit flying and saving his school and you know, doing this and that. And so it's like, well, the studio's pressured to have more stuff with the kid in the next movie and the next movie. And who knows, maybe he had 100 adventures that were unexplored when he was a child. And what is the line where you stop being a child and you become an adult? And maybe it was the death of his sister, his mentor, or maybe his sister went bad and became the great enemy of his life.
Ooh,
or maybe
nice.
One day he just said, I don't need you anymore. I am now the Green Machine. And all the boys in the audience go, yay, we don't like girls. You know, if there's any number of ways to do that, to say, okay, and this is the story that we're going to deal with, is when he finally outgrew his sister, or when she was killed, or when she went bad.
I like the went bad angle. That's hot.
There's just so many fun things, and it's up to you to decide what you want to write about. If you want to write this, now I want to read your Green Machine story.
Yes. Yes.
And hopefully that's what you intended all along, is for people to say, well, for some of the people to say, I want the Green Machine, and other people to say, well, I can let that go, but I love the story about the rats and the two brothers, or the sister and the brother.
Yeah. No, that's exactly what I was hoping. I think it's great with what we can do now as writers and content producers. You know, we can put out these little things that aren't maybe necessary to our main story, but are supplementary. You know, if people want more, they can get it.
Well, and while I was holding my breath, Renee, I wanted to say,
and should have,
but didn't because I was constrained. This is brilliant. I mean, the whole cross media, different formats, continuation or deepening of the primary story arc is happening so often, so much more. The whole transmedia, buzzword that's going on out there, and I'm not sure this necessarily is specifically transmedia, but I think it's awesome that you're exploring a parallel that is going to serve to enrich your primary story and might even spin off into a whole separate pursuit. Who knows? But this is awesome. This is awesome. I wanted to ask you, is there anything that you specifically wanted to ask Big and Rich that you were hoping to get out of this brainstorming session that we haven't touched on?
I don't think so. I mean, my main concern with it was just that it was so, that it just didn't work. It didn't make sense. It couldn't be its own comic book story, but it doesn't sound like that's the case. So
no, I don't think so. I think we've gone a long way towards, you know, we certainly haven't closed all the gaps, but I think there's some literary gold in here for you.
Yeah. You can make a comic book story out of anything.
Yeah.
And don't focus on, oh, they've done this before in Iron Man, or, oh, they did this and he was Syndrome in Incredibles, because everything in comic books has been done. It's been around for 80 years, and it's just how you do it. And maybe nobody has made an Iron Man type story with a little boy before. And it doesn't matter if they have, because Big and I would know about it if they did. No, the truth is, it doesn't matter. There are 100 guys out there like Superman, and there are 100 guys out there like Batman or Spider-Man or whatever it is. If you're passionate enough about it and you're a creative enough person, you can make, I mean, like Spawn is a great example. He's a huge ripoff of Batman meets Spider-Man. this artist, Todd McFarlane, who drew Batman and drew Spider-Man and said, I'm going to create my own character that's both. There are millions of people who love Spawn, even though he's a ripoff of those characters, because he's so well designed and because actually there's some really cool mythology there. And that if you can do that with Green Machine, it doesn't matter how simplistic it started out or whether you know comic books or not. If you care about it, then we will care about it.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Definitely. Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Brian, any final closing words for Renee regarding the story?
Yeah, I was kind of holding back a little bit just because I tend to go really dark, especially with storyline and villains. And you know, one of the things I was thinking is if he is the reason that his sister is killed or something with his suit, he, you know, underestimates his strength or whatever. And then I thought back to your audience and I was thinking, okay, tweens, you know, is that really the way to go? But I think it is. I don't mean necessarily that specific, but you know, I would say, don't be afraid of going a little bit dark with the origin story, because these kids are, they're dealing with very similar things with loss of parents and all of these things. And I think that sometimes we see ourselves in these comic books. And when we see ourselves that deeply, we get really into what happens to that hero. You know, that would be my advice.
Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah.
And I would echo a word that Rish invoked, and that is mythology. Right. One of the reasons I think that comics and graphic novels and that culture sustains is because it really has that epic scope, that mythic scope, and the key element of myths is the archetypes and the hero's journey that's drawn in such broad strokes. And so as you evolve the Green Machine concept, you know, maybe review a few myths, you know, dig through some, and you know, Greek is good, but there's some fabulous Norse myths, there's marvelous Japanese myths. And I know this because Brian and I did a whole series called Mythologica, and we did all kinds of great stuff along those lines. And that really is the essence of this superhero. They are the demigod, the avatar. So as you explore that, you know, dig into that as well. And I think you've got an amazing structure here that is, I think you're going to find that you're going to have too many ideas before the end of it all.
Yeah, that seems to be the way of it, but that's better than too few.
Absolutely. Renee, we always exact a vow from all of our guest writers that when these books that we've helped out in some way, hopefully, end up getting published, that you come back and you let us know so that we can put you on our success story link where we've actually, somebody has actually gone on and published a work that we helped on. Will you do that for us?
Definitely. And you've been extremely helpful. So excellent. Yes, I would be happy to do that.
Mission accomplished. Big Anklevich and Rish Outfield, thank you guys so much. I know you guys have a lot going on, and we really appreciate you taking the time and helping out Renee and us with a very cool episode and a very cool story. We're much obliged.
Well, thank you for inviting us, Dave and Brian. We get together anyway, and I thought it was great. The time flew by.
Yeah, it really does.
Yeah,
it
it's a lot of fun.
Cool. Yeah. All right, let's bring this to a close. Friends, those of you tuning in, whether you're tuning in the day this thing dropped or 5 years from now out on an iTunes archive, thank you so much for hitting that play button and spending some time with us. We are deeply grateful for that. Brian, what do we always offer our listeners as we segue out of here?
Oh, boy. Well, go right.
Go write. Absolutely. And go write a review on iTunes for us if you're so inclined. Or drop us a line, leave a comment on the posts. We would love to hear from you. Stay tuned in a couple of days. We're going to have Nobilis Reed on the show. His showcase will be dropping in a few days and a workshop after that. The fun just keeps on rolling here at the Roundtable. So until we talk again, you guys take care and we'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This episode is copyrighted 2012 by the Roundtable Podcast and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Share Alike license. That means don't sell it, but you can share it all you like. And you can even use pieces of it in your own derivative work.
as long as you attribute us as the source and release the work under the same licensing terms. Theme music composed and performed by the talented Hepcats of Brotown, Gary Gold, David LaBruyere, Billy Nobel, and Matt O'Donnell. If you'd like to be a guest writer or guest host, or learn more about the Roundtable Podcast, please visit our website at www.roundtablepodcast.com or visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/roundtablepodcast. Our Twitter tag is at writerspodcast, or just send us an email at thetable@roundtablepodcast.com. Thanks for listening.